Weekends on the Fanatic. T. Lynam and Joe Torty. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
Good morning and a happy Saturday to you, D. Lynam and Joe Torty, 97.5 The Fanatic. D, I've got to admit, earlier on in the week when I was watching the Sixers, I was amused. You know my my taco fall thing. It's a thing. It's been a thing for a long time. But watching taco fall in an NBA game was kind of amusing for me, especially considering the fact that after a little while he was doing a good job on the Sixers and stuff like that. I have to admit, I've watched Zion Williamson with a similar eye over the course of his college career and then what he's done in the NBA. Much less fun last night for me to watch what Zion Williamson did to the Sixers. I could almost watch with like a novelty thing when it comes to taco fall, but the unfamiliarity that I had watching the team last night, and it was a completely foreign land to me to watch the bully balls version of the Sixers, which is to say that Simmons and Embiid, two of your more physical players, get out-muscled continually, positionally, and things like that. To watch Zion Williamson bullying a china shop his way through the paint on the way to just scoring however he wanted really disturbed me. Did you have a similar experience? Good morning, D. How are you?
Taco Fall and Zion Williamson in the same.
Yeah, that was not the same.
It was coming out of left field for me. I didn't know. I don't know. Taco Fall was. Zion Williamson is an all-star caliber player in this league. So
clearly.
That is. Watching last night, I would say this. I think Stan Van Gundy can coach. I think he identified that the Sixers are a defensive-minded team. And he was prepared to try to challenge that in every way possible. And they did. And then in turn, his team was the one that was the defensive-minded team and held them to 94 points. So I think Zion is 20 years old. This guy, I posed this question last weekend that, and while Brandon Ingram did not shoot the ball well last night, I said, as a twosome down the road, If all things stay equal and they stay together for some similarity of years in this league, the twosome of Brandon and Zion and then Ben and Joel, you know, who will have the greater success sure. as a duo? And I think, you know, it's going to be a close race.
37 points, 15 rebounds. The rebounds were a career high. And this is one of the games, we talked about the Pelicans' young core, and those two certainly contribute a huge part to their success presently and moving into the future. But my question has always been, okay, the Sixers, though, every team has some group. Every good team that you play against, every playoff team has some, whether it's two, whether it's three, whether it's four, whatever. I was surprised to see the Sixers' lack of answers for Williamson, and I get that his game's developing. I saw somebody say if he's a pull-up jumper away from being probably the league's biggest or second biggest problem. But like you said, D, the inability to score for the Sixers, coupled with the fact you couldn't answer that, was kind of a doomsday scenario for the Sixers yesterday.
It was. I was saying to Dylan before we came on the air, you know, the Sixers have struggled against some good teams. You know, they beat Boston last week, okay, but lost to Memphis. And I've been saying for a while, you know, this is going to be difficult. They're 11 for 31 from three. You know, their three-point shooting is not good enough. And most nights, the combination of Ben and Joel defensively keep people at bay. And, you know, Zion was able to attack them as a group. And, you know, is it one game? Okay, yes. But against good teams, I'm not saying they lose them all, but they have to work really hard. And I think that the good teams are trying to figure out how they can slow this group down. And the key is obviously if you can control Joel. And last night, you know, he's been back a couple of games, played very well against Boston, came back and then sat out the back-to-back, second night of the back-to-back. You know, I don't know. He's probably still working his way back in to shape, but his 14 points was not indicative of who Joel is. And obviously, Zion being able to get to the rim is not indicative of either of those guys defensively.
Yeah, Embiid was kind of hot and cold last night. Like you said, it could be a playing his way into shape thing. Speaking of that, George Hill provided an update on where he is in terms of his thumb procedure recovery. He got the cast off a week and a half ago, earlier this week he said that. So you mentioned the shooting woes that the Sixers have had. No way of knowing whether George Hill immediately steps in and cures those things. But you do get the impression that any time that he can return to the lineup, even though they're not rushing him, would be most welcome, because it's not like he's going to be interrupting a really hot shooting streak so far.
Yeah, I'm not looking for George Hill to be the savior of the day from three-point range. I think he can make a shot. I don't think it's going to change the makeup of how these guys play. And they're a team, now they shot 31 threes last night, but they don't shoot at the same clip as other teams. And I don't think George is going to change that. And as I said, their percentage is fine. It's just, you know, they can go and make 11, but you have a Brooklyn team that can go and make 21. And that's a big difference.
Right.
So I don't think that George is going to change statistically what we see these guys to be. Though I do like him in the rotation of being a veteran guy who's a 3-and-D guy. That, you know, last night Korkmaz shot the three ball well, and Shake's been playing well.
Mm-hmm.
So those two were guys that I said I didn't want to count on as you go into the postseason of being able to deliver from downtown. And both of them are doing a decent job right now. So I think George is just going to be a reliable veteran, and those guys have been actually making threes in the way I think George will.
610-632-0975. The Thunder are the opponent tonight at 9 p.m. Okay, so last time, since the last time we spoke, the Eagles have also been busy. We've seen them starting to sign some free agents defensively, and I want to get to that in a moment. But there was a story that came out yesterday, and multiple sources or multiple outlets had it, but the first place that I saw it was Pro Football Talk. Even still, with everything going on legally with Deshaun Watson, mm-hmm. There's still a report that says that the Eagles are still interested in upgrading their team to the point where Watson would be the guy that they would want to add. I went through a process with this, D, because obviously, like, the legal process is what it is, and that needs to play out on its own. But I was thinking, best case scenario, Deshaun Watson is almost certainly being faced with a trip to the commissioner's list, some kind of suspension, some kind of sitting out of games. And I was thinking, why would the Eagles be loading up with the uncertain future of a guy legally when, you know, almost certainly he's going to miss a quarter of the season or more? And I realize it's because the season's getting written off anyway. And if you're going to lose all of these games, what do you care if your potential starting quarterback of the future misses a handful of them? But were you surprised when you heard or saw that report that the Eagles, despite it all, still might be in?
I bet I could go to at least 10 cities in the NFL that would write the same story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what everybody is seeing is that they think that they're going to be able to get Watson, you know, for a nickel on the dollar.
Right, sure.
You know, Houston, unless there is incredible pressure in that city to deal him, at this point, him wanting to be traded has no value anymore.
Correct.
He's lost his power. So unless they feel pressure from some other place, I don't believe they would want to trade the guy. Now they have him exactly where they want. They can. He didn't want to be there. Now that's the least of his problems. So long as he can still play, and after whatever commissioner's list penalty he will probably pay, you know, they don't have to make a move at this point. So I think everybody puts their name in the hat that doesn't have a high level starting quarterback. And I bet we could look across the league and find something similar to what we read about the Eagles.
The other team that I did see mentioned was the Miami Dolphins, which, of course, is Deshaun Watson's preferred team coming out. So, yeah, I saw that and I thought that was interesting and noteworthy because why not? It's always the Eagles that are involved. But like you said, D, it could have been a bunch of other teams as well.
Or somebody writing it about the team that needs a higher level quarterback.
Sure. Yep, fair enough. The moves that the Eagles have made, they finally start to get active in free agency. They sign a linebacker, which literally had me rubbing my eyes to see if that was actually a thing, and signing Eric Wilson to that one-year deal after 4 years as a Viking. I wouldn't call any of what they've done so far under the new staff, the new regime, splash moves. Is there anything so far that has caught your attention with the Eagles, or anything that has you paying paying a little bit closer attention than you were, perhaps?
No, but I will say when I was reading about the signing of Eric Wilson, the start of Paul Dama, which was how bad the defense of the Vikings was. So, like, put that into perspective before you say, whoa, way to go. You went out and got a linebacker. So I take it as, yes, they're being active, but is that a great move, a decent move, you know, just trying to build your roster when you know you have so many holes? I would say it's the last
of
them.
It's so hard, especially defensively, for me to evaluate how players are going to fit, because we've seen the Eagles go wrong a lot of different ways, right? We've seen them take pieces from good defenses that were not the right pieces, like Byron Maxwell, for instance. And who knows? Eric Wilson was a very productive player, like you said, on a pretty rough Vikings defense last year. So is it kind of like a Nnamdi Asamoah situation where, hey, somebody has to put up the numbers or somebody has to look good there?
But and maybe he comes here and being on a good team makes him look better.
Right.
Could be. It can be either way.
Sure.
But it was fair to point out how poor the Vikings defense was.
Jordan Howard re-signing. You getting the jersey back out of the closet?
I never had one, but
oh, wow.
I was always a fan of him. You know that, I think. That I thought he was productive when he was here. I actually thought he and Miles as a 1-2 punch were a good 1-2 punch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know, 2 years, is it 2 years later? Yeah, two.
Yeah.
That, you know, is he the same guy? We'll see. With a different staff, will he be used the same way? I don't know. But I never had a problem with his production. And to me, he delivered when he was here the first time. So maybe he shouldn't have ever had to leave.
To begin with. 610-632-0975. It's D-Lineham and Joe Torti. This weekend's programming is brought to you by Wawa. Breakfast is sizzling at Wawa with 2 for $4 sizzlies. Grab any 2 Wawa sizzlies for $4 and enjoy a delicious breakfast on the go. So, D, that is kind of what's going on briefly with the Sixers and the Eagles. Obviously, so much more going on. But before I let it slip too far, it's a pretty good weekend coming up in sports. The Masters, obviously. I'm watching Victor Hovland. I know that you were, too. Locked in. First hole. I'm watching on ESPN Plus, the streaming, because it doesn't come live until 3 p.m. or whatever. And I'm sitting there thinking, all right, I'm going to have Victor Hovland stuff to talk about. And Victor Hovland had probably the 2 most like adventurous rounds that I've ever seen to start the Masters while still
a lot of people did. Dustin Johnson is going home. He didn't even make the cut. Actually, he's not allowed to go home. He has to give the green jacket to this year's winner.
Right, he's got to
hang out.
So he has
to hang out.
That's rough.
That's very rough. No, Rory, he's not.
Missed it.
Brooks Koepka out.
So I was a lot of big that names Koepka out. Was even out there like walking around. Like that was something that was surprising considering his surgery. But yeah, I was watching Hovland and I'm thinking, well, you get a 7 the first time, then you get super hot, then you give some back, and then you go on another birdie streak and have almost the same thing happen the following round. It's an
tough course.
There's no way around that. But yes.
Like after the first day, you know, everybody would say, oh, Justin has a 4-stroke lead.
Commanding lead.
Commanding. Yes. And, you know, here he is. He's got two guys behind him who is stroke behind him. And he's got another three that are 2 behind him.
Had to scramble to get through a 72 yesterday.
Yeah. And I thought he was great in his post-game interview. He has great because at the end of the day, even though he shot even par, he's still in the lead.
Right.
Going into, you know, Saturday. So you might want to, like, beat yourself up because you had been so good on day one. But you are still in the lead. So you can't act like you're, you know, really screwed this up. The guy who screwed it up was the guy who banged his putter into the ground and had to putt it out with his, I thought at first it was a 3-wood, then it was a 5-wood for sure. I actually was like, in a putt that looked like a gimme was not a gimme with a 5-wood.
Yikes. I know. It's like you said, it's a tough course and players have had their adventures so far.
Yeah.
I knew that you would be paying close attention there for sure, and I wanted to make sure that I got that in.
Well, I last week when the women's amateur was there,
mm-hmm.
was incredible to watch, and plus one was what was the winning number in the women's amateur. But those people who played that day had one chance to have a practice round there.
Oh, really?
They've only played the course one time, and when you know that those greens are like they are, I'm not even sure I would have played the round like a real round. I think I would have putted as much as I could to get knowledge of those greens.
Sure.
And one girl after so they were there 2 days in a row. Let me think. No, she, after her practice round, she switched caddies to have somebody who had local knowledge because she realized how difficult the greens were there, and anybody who would be able to give you something.
Need every edge that you can get.
And I think you see it even, you know, the Dustin Johnson is the biggest one. He tore up that course in the fall.
Yeah.
And now here he comes back 6 months later.
And what did he say? He said, I just didn't putt well. Yeah. I couldn't
putt. Which is what I'm saying.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So right in there with you. 610-632-0975. And D, I the other one. Now, the shootout loss for the Flyers wasn't necessarily the culmination of this, because the shootout's just the way that it goes. But we're seeing play out in real time the Elaine Vigneault stuff that we cautioned against at the time of hiring, like when it happened. Said, enjoy this year, because next year, the year after, could look.
See, I thought it would take
rougher.
At least another year. I said this last week. It shouldn't be this soon. It shouldn't. No. And I'm not sure I can put it all on him.
No. No, I don't think so.
You know, there's some who say the front office hasn't done enough. They, especially defensively for the team. And then you now have a Carter Hart who has struggled. And, you know, if he hadn't been as good as he was last year, would you have done more to better your defense?
Sure, yeah.
But you didn't, because he looked like a guy who can always stand on his head. But and because of his age, you think he's going to do that for 10 years for you.
Right. Well, and it does, it reminds you of like either Patrick Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers, or like I'm sure in their local markets, they're still locked into what their GMs are doing, but it's not a conversation nationwide. Like, are the Packers doing enough at tight end? Because
right.
You got Aaron Rodgers who covers so
exactly.
much of what you're worried about.
But when you're in the here and now and you see a Carter Hart that struggles, I want to say last weekend he had a decent game. They also lost in a shootout, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was the same thing almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he did a decent job. I think only gave up 2 goals. And in that game, actually, that was the one where the Flyers had so many more shots on goal than
right.
the Islanders. It was like 20 plus more. And you're saying to yourself, come on, you can't convert something here?
Stings.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. It just seems like there's some kind of disconnect for them right now. On a given night, like today, you can read all about how they were happy with their penalty kill And that's a good thing coming into playing their game this afternoon because of how good Boston's power play has been against them, for sure. So you see something that's a positive, and yet they can't put all facets of the game together enough on a given night.
With 17 games left, the Flyers are 6 back of the Bruins.
And I think they're 6-1, meaning the Bruins beat them 6 out of 7 times this year.
Yeah.
And they're playing them today.
Yeah. So there you go. Two.
And their power play against the Flyers is 10 for 20.
I was going to say, they're like at 50% or something.
Yeah, yeah. 10 for 20.
Pretty bonkers.
And even if they think the Flyers' penalty kill is getting better, I think it's been horrific over a stretch. Like, the one game was decent.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
But percentage-wise, not a great.
Points-wise, we're talking about kind of the top of the Eastern Division this year, running away and playing so well. The Capitals and Islanders both have 56 points, and the Penguins have 54 points. The Bruins have 48 points, but they have 4 games in hand on all of those teams. So they're still playing really, like, they're playing just
which
as well
so
as
weird.
Any of those.
Those numbers don't really add up for the Bruins, to me, right?
Right. So that
I don't
means
get it.
The Bruins are 21-10-6. So that means, like, they have just not done a whole lot of losing this year. And I think that they were a team, not themselves, but they were playing against teams that were limited. Like, I think that there were a couple of teams that had games postponed, and stuff like that. But they all happened against the Bruins. I think that's how you add that up.
Okay.
But I agree. I was like, how does this late in the season, how does a team have 4 games in hand on teams in front of them? But there you go. And we haven't talked about the Phillies. We got to talk about the Phillies because I know.
8-1 loss.
8-1 loss. I know that you were locked into every pitch. I know that you were. Because I was too. 610-632-0975. It's D-Lineman and Joe Torre. We roll on until 8 o'clock right here on the Fanatic.
Weekends on the Fanatic. D-Lineham and Joe Torre. Sports talk never stops. Listen all weekend to 97.5 The Fanatic. Philadelphia.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back, D-Line. I'm Joe Torre, 97.5 The Fanatic. We roll on until 8 a.m. here. Dylan McKinnon is producing the program. Good morning, Dylan. The phone number to get involved, 610-632-0975. I do want to get to the Phillies because it was not what you'd call a banner performance last night, but it is one in a...
It was if you were a Braves fan.
I guess that's a good point. Depends on where the banner is.
Correct.
I guess that's true.
I'm on now.
Let's get to Eric.
How do you say Ronald's last name? Acuna, or is there like some...
Acuna.
Acuna.
Yes.
I saw the little tilde.
Yes. That's the...
All right. Well, he had it going on both sides, offensively and defensively.
He was rolling. He was absolutely rolling. Let's go to Eric in South Philly next on the Fanatic. Good morning, Eric.
Hey, good morning. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, yep. You sound great. Thanks.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
So I just want to just say a few things about the Eagles and their draft plan.
Mm-hmm.
The off-season signing, I kind of like it because, you know, Howie hands were tied because he can, you know, because they're salary cap. I know he put himself in that mess, but, you know, considering the situation, I think he had a pretty okay off-season.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have a whole lot of room to do anything, so, and you have a certain amount of needs. You got to do something.
Exactly. And I think I like the Eric Wilson signing only because I really did not want to draft a linebacker first round.
He wasn't going to anyhow.
Yeah, that's true. I honestly think the Giants are probably going to pick up Micah Parsons if he's available to them at 11. And the report that the Cowboys wants Kyle Pitts, I'm kind of okay with that. Just because that's going to push a corner down to us, because I think they were in the market for a corner as well.
So you'd rather see them at 12 take a D-back?
No, I'd rather have them at 6. I'm taking an impact player, but it is what it is now. So I can't be too mad about it. As long as we pick up a solid cornerback first round, and then the next two pick can be receiver or the line, I'm okay with that. As long as we get a corner first round, because right now we got what Von Amatic opposite Darius Slay.
If he's not in the slot, yeah. If he is in the slot, then you've got some people that you've barely heard of.
Exactly, I'm not okay with that. And considering that I don't really know the defensive coordinator, like the team is going to run. Mm-hmm. All of that put like a big fog over the whole thing. So those are my points. You guys have a great show. Nice talking to you guys.
Appreciate
you too, Aaron.
Thanks, man. It seems to be D. I'm not going to say everyone. That seems to be the temperature of most people that I talk to.
Wanting a cornerback.
Corner is the way to go now at 12.
So, I don't know if I go to CBS's mock draft. First of all, the whole concept of mock draft.
Uh-huh.
It's a branding marketing ploy.
Clearly, yeah.
You just keep changing it up to create conversation. I don't know. Is it the day before I should actually believe you?
Well, and my thing is when people loop trades in and stuff like that. I'm like, if we're just putting together a list of fits, that's one thing. But like predicting trades,
this is good that you use the word fits, because with the Eagles, there's a number of things they need, so somebody can continue to do a mock draft and find a need for them.
That's right. Just cycle through players.
Cycle through. So this latest one was now they take an offensive lineman in a Rashawn Slater. Who played at Northwestern.
That'd be a good get by the looks of things.
Right, but it's not the sexy get.
Not the sexy one. No.
But a good get.
Yeah.
Guy is solid at his position.
It seems that way.
Because when I see the name, of course I had to go and look, and I'm like, I don't know this guy.
Who's
this dude?
And then you see tested well, and all that other kind of stuff.
And, doesn't let anybody get to his quarterback in college.
Right, exactly.
He's not going to touch him. So this is good. And you can put him at any position.
Right.
So,
which is kind of needed now because it's
you don't know who's going first,
right? Exactly. Yeah, the Eagles' offensive line. I was thinking about this.
So I'm a fan of this. If that pick
that'd be
was
great.
Taken,
I thought the same thing when I saw that. I said, "Oh, I haven't seen that name
not
before."
Not bad at all. This is a good thing.
It literally is like driving a clunker right now. Like it's getting you to work. The Eagles' offensive line. You have no idea what's going to go. It's going to be. The
but
battery.
How about if you have a guy who could, when the first piece falls off, okay. Rashawn Slater could do that.
Right.
He can be that position.
Way better. Yeah. Especially because...
I think Dylan's going to write an article for the website about Rashawn Slater.
If he hasn't already. I mean, Dylan's been asked to write like 65 prospects, I think, at this point. He's covering a lot of ground. I do agree with a lot of things that Eric said. However, I have to admit, we look around the division... If the Giants want to take Micah Parsons, so be it. I would not be super stoked if Kyle Pitts ends up going to the Cowboys when he was linked to the Eagles at number 6.
Well, that'll be a bummer.
I would not
that'd
be
like
super excited.
Lamb, and then they get Pitts 2 years in a row, and you say to yourself, are you kidding me?
Well, and there are still some, and it was not the... I don't want to say that it was the popular opinion at the time, because it wasn't. Like, everyone was very excited about Carson Wentz. But there were people talking about Ezekiel Elliott and saying, what could the Eagles do? Could they make a
smaller
move for Zeke?
By the way, will he have a bounce back year?
Great question, D. Like, I was thinking about that. I don't know when the last time I remember a back had a bounce back year.
I don't know either.
You know what I mean?
But I also didn't feel like he was... usually it's because... the longevity of a running back is shorter.
Yeah, right.
It's short.
Yeah, it is.
You get banged up. And I didn't think he had, by age, didn't seem to me, or by watching his play, that it should have gone so quickly so south.
It's a great point, because I was thinking about it with, what do they say, that the average running back career is
it's
like
really
a year
short.
And a half or something like that in the
it's
NFL.
So short.
And I get that there are a lot of running backs that come out, so sometimes these running backs have 2 week careers, so that brings down the averages and stuff like that. But
even the best.
Yeah.
Even if we look at a Gurley.
Right. Well, Gurley's a perfect example, right?
I mean, come on.
Injuries did play a role in that, but not every back that we're going to get is going to be Adrian Peterson, where he plays at an acceptable or above level for 12 years. Like, it's not something that's
right.
Common.
I get that. Right? I'm not looking for that, but...
But I start to wonder why I expect these guys to last 6, 7, 8 years. You know, when the average is a year and a half. Maybe 4 or 5 years is... Well, what teams have discovered backs have, and that's why they don't draft them.
Then these next 2 years better be great for Miles.
Yeah, that's the truth. That's the truth. You do wonder, though, with Miles, if he gets shielded a little bit because there's less tread off the tires.
Right.
You know?
Well, we'll see. Maybe he gets used differently this year.
Yeah. I saw a little bit of the Marcus Hayes article on my way out the door this morning about Nick Sirianni's positivity. Did you read that one?
I saw it. I didn't read it.
Yeah. I have to get to the end
because,
of this thing.
Yeah. I said to myself, I'm going to read the rest of the paper and then come back to that one.
Yeah, right. I had the same experience. I was like, oh, this is going to be one that I sit down and give time to. Because it was the headline asked a worthwhile question. Like, is Nick Sirianni for real with his...
Right, but there's a lot of reasons. You know, I mean, if we go back to, I get to coach offense and defense.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
I'm sure that quote's going to be in there.
I hope so.
It has to be. Come on. If he's talking about his positivity, nothing says that more than coaching both sides of the ball and being over ecstatic about it.
And the second question that was asked is like, is that level of optimism going to wear people out? I'm like, well, Marcus, you've been in Philadelphia for a while. I think you got a good read on that.
You don't have to care about wearing out the fan. That's the pointless part of it.
Right.
But you do have to care about, does your locker room take you seriously?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And so I get to coach offense and defense.
You know,
it's potentially
I mean,
a concern.
The
in that
only thing that if you're a guy and you think I'm not, you know, we're talking about Vigneault earlier.
Yes.
I mean, he's going to wear his guys out on doing the complete opposite.
Right.
And a person may say, well, how can positivity really be a bad thing? It can when it's fake.
Or even if it comes off as fake.
Like right.
If
like
people
even
don't
if you,
buy it.
Right. Exactly.
And I do, look, from the press conferences.
Yes.
That's what it is. Like when people like the first one, especially people like some people said that he was not prepared. Some people said
he definitely wasn't prepared in the first one.
Right,
I mean,
fair enough.
There is no way, shape or form that can tell me you did anything of preparation for that.
And I understood at the time that it's not the first press conference where someone's been completely unprepared. Now, usually head coaching press conferences, for an introduction, you normally do see a little bit more preparation. But sometimes it's the Tim Tebow Jets press conference where he says, I'm excited 64 times.
Right.
In the 3
and some of that can
conference.
Be nerves.
Right. Exactly. Like so you could write that off.
But the only other times he's spoken, which I think is 2 after that.
Right.
Twice. Has been equally painful, like cringeworthy.
And I was trying to figure out why that was. And to me, Marcus Hayes hit it on the head a little bit. I said, this guy might be this excited about this job. And I hope
well,
that
Well, that's
he is.
True. He's a young guy. He's
you
getting
know?
It, you know, he kind of came out of nowhere.
Right.
There were a lot of other names said to be possibilities.
And he was not on any list. He was not on any list of people.
Oh, he's on only on Jeffrey Lurie's list.
On Jeffrey Lurie's list. Right.
So was Rager. Oh, no, he might have been on other people's list. But it's the same thing.
Right.
He's trying to pull, you know, a diamond in the rough.
But I do think that despite that, like the possibility that it is, you know, genuine, I think it doesn't necessarily come off to people as that way sometimes, where people are thinking, is this guy actually for real? Like, or, you know, whatever your response is to people who are super bubbly and super happy, never had a bad day in my life, it's another day in paradise, like kind of people.
Well, here, I'm going to give you an example of somebody, and it was genuine. Pat Croce was a person who was always high on life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And every time he spoke, there was a positivity to it. Even when he invited season ticket holders to take a seat in the Wells Fargo, wasn't called that then. Tell me what we're doing wrong. And he wanted to hear. And there was a positivity about the guy asking those questions.
I mean, sure.
You're actually going to take this? And every time Larry and Alan are in a fight, there was something positive coming out of Pat. But it wasn't. He wouldn't ignore the truth in there, right? Mm-hmm. He would, you know, tell you the truth about Alan or the truth about Larry in that moment. But we're going to get through it, you know, something like that.
So how did you learn or come to understand that that was genuine and
because,
not an act?
Because if you have the ability, opportunity to be around that individual in real life,
mm-hmm.
and the personality stays the same, then you learn that that is real.
Fair.
But I also felt that he was in his positivity. He wasn't afraid to say the truth about a situation.
Mm.
He would try to, before it was all said and done, get you to the end of we're gonna be okay, or I'm gonna fix this, or yeah, that was his thing with the season ticket holder. I'm gonna fix this,
right?
And you left there feeling better about it. You got to state your annoyances
and actually feel heard, like there might be
heard.
Something that happened.
And then he was here. Maybe that's the when you say, "How did you know it was real?" He would hear you.
Mm-hmm.
He would answer the question. He wouldn't try to just go to another place. He would be positive in answering it, but he would answer your question.
And I think that you bring up 2 points. One of them, the second one, that is uber annoying. You see it happen on news interviews
all
and stuff
time.
Like that all the time, where
yep.
a question gets asked
and
it literally
goes somewhere
doesn't
else.
Matter. Does not
and
matter.
Sirianni was the king of that in his press conference,
yes.
the first one. Whoa. Not only did he go to another place, he went to another place and spoke for 20 minutes about another place.
Yeah, and then no one could follow up and say, all right, so the question was about this. But the other thing is, you know, I'm sure, and this is another way of saying what you said, time spent with Pat Croce.
Right, but not everybody is going to have that ability. And that's
right.
why I said ability, opportunity.
But the head coach, certainly people felt like they knew Chip. Certainly people felt like they knew Doug. Certainly people felt like they knew Andy. So if this guy sticks around for any length of time at all, given how exposed NFL head coaches are, generally speaking, by the media to their fan bases, even Chip, who kept it incredibly close to the vest, you'll learn. We're going to learn whether Nick Sirianni is truly like the gushy, happy-go-lucky guy all the time.
Well, because we learned quickly, Chip was absolutely the opposite of that.
Exactly.
I mean, he would be just annoyed that you don't know as much football as me.
Right. Well, plus, I think that it was something that he and Doug shared. We talked about this as well. Doing the media was not a thing that they wanted to do
hated
to begin
it.
With.
Yep, hated it.
Right? And I think that actually resonated with some people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think some people were like, okay, well, like, I just want him to coach the football team, too. I'm not necessarily worried about what they say in press conferences. But for a large group of people, it was, this person's a representative of my team and the team that I root for. I need a little bit more. So I don't know what kind of balance they're trying to strike here with Sirianni, who now gets to coach offense and defense. How cool is that? But so far, just in the press conference area, it's like a wait-and-see thing because he hasn't been overly impressive to people. He doesn't win a press conference in the same way that some other coaches, like, for example, whatever you want to think about him, I think the next bad press conference that Rick Pitino has for college basketball or like John Calipari is the first one. Like, you come out and you're like, wow, this guy's really got it under control and that sort of thing. I just don't get that vibe. I don't get that vibe yet.
Oh, no.
The Eagles.
I don't think you're ever going to get that vibe with this guy.
No, I might not. I might not.
I think the first time we'll really get to know is when he is doing a press conference following a football game.
Right.
That'll be your true tell. Because if his greatest asset is his ability to communicate to you why and the who and the how of what happened in an actual game where he was coaching both sides of the ball, then that would be the one way he could win this fan base over.
Sure.
That would follow up what he has done to this point and wipe all of it away.
Well, he'll have some moment. Like the first moment that Doug changed my mind a little bit, where I thought I knew what Doug Peterson was doing and I really didn't, was when he got like mic'd up and he was yelling at guys to pull their heads out of their rear ends and stuff like that. Totally flying in the face of the aw shucks, like happy to be here, like Doug Peterson that was introduced. At some point, there might be something like that that happens with Nick Sirianni, where people, you're reading all these articles about how insanely competitive he is, and if he's like a spit-flying headset going all over the place head coach during a game, you know, maybe it's, you don't get the impression that it's a guy who's like, you know, so far in over his head or was the outside the box hire, that sort of thing. But like you said, football's a long way away.
I mean, the one thing that you did know with Doug is whether it was holding the clipboard or not, he played in the league for a long time.
It's true.
So no matter what, he could at least have the part of him, I've been in a locker room, guys. I know what it's like to be a teammate. I know what it's like to be in these win or losing situations. And that resonates.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I mean, I don't know what you hang your hat on if you don't have, and I'm going to say, the polished people skills. We don't see it yet. Maybe in a locker room this guy does, but he does not come off as polished, being able to communicate what he's seeing, what he's feeling, or what he wants to do. That's just not his strength right now.
The binders from Andy Reid are pretty famous. The playbook had better be really good for Nick Sirianni.
Exactly.
It better be like an elite level playbook. That's kind of step one.
And I will tell you, you can go and look at Andy Reid's opening press conference, and there was a guy who was commanding.
Yeah.
May not have, it, what became, time's yours, that's on me, you know, that all came after the fact. But if you go to the day he was hired press conference, that was a guy who knew what he wanted to do.
Well, he was the hot shot, and he delivered it right away. Like, yeah. It was no, as advertised.
There was no scaredness or, woo, yay,
right,
when he went to the mic that day.
Right.
He was a man.
Just expected it, and this is the next step.
It was an order of, I have been, you know, with the Packers. Guys have gone on to be head coaches who have done exactly how I did it.
And here I am. 610-632-0975. It's D. Lineham and Joe Torti. We roll on until 8 a.m. Do want to get to the Phillies. And of course, I have more Eagles and Sixers stuff that we want to bounce off of. If you want to join the conversation, it's 610-632-0975. Dylan McKinnon's producing the program. It's D. Lineham and Joe Torti, talking to you until 8 a.m. right here on The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.